Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. And we've got another hour of At Your Service. We're going to go through some more news of the day, some legal issues. And we're also, like I mentioned earlier, going to talk about what does it mean when we discuss the American dream? What is it? What does it mean to you? And is it even still achievable in 21st century America? But some folks have been holding very patiently through the break. Let's go to Bill, who's up first. Hey, Bill, welcome to Camo X.
Hi. I worked with the Missouri Department of Youth Services for 10 years, which is probably where this young child will go if she's found guilty of something.
Okay.
And I don't think that this warrants her being tried as an adult.
Okay, and I'm really wanting to hear your perspective, Bill. So what leads you to that conclusion?
A couple of things. One, her history, there appears not to be a violent history or a history of criminal behavior or violent behavior, and there was no weapon used. Now, I've been an advocate for any time a gun is used in a crime, that it automatically becomes an adult situation, even if they're 13 years old.
Good point.
So those two things, and I think her punishment should be harsh because what she did do was dangerous and resulted in serious injury.
I want to follow up on that, Bill, before you move on, because how harsh can the penalty be for someone who's 15? Because walk us through, how does this work from a court perspective, when a juvenile is found guilty of a crime and then they reach the age of 18, how does that work?
Well, in the past, I've worked with a couple of juveniles who actually were convicted of murder, and they were held in juvenile custody until their 18th birthday, and then they were transferred to an adult prison. In this case, I think just her being held in a juvenile facility until she turns 18 would be severe, because most of the kids who are in the treatment facilities, which hopefully she would get in where they would talk to her, meet with her, and help her find other ways to deal with anger, other ways to deal with conflict,
Right. So, but I want to get back to that question. So from your perspective, and just so we lay the foundation here, if she's only going to serve, even if she's convicted of first-degree assault, she would serve until she's 18, then she's released. 3 years of, well, we lost Bill. Sorry about that. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that I'm questioning whether just 3 years of incarceration in a juvenile facility is sufficient punishment for what we all saw on the video. I'm not saying it isn't, but I am questioning whether that is sufficient punishment. Cheryl's been holding for a long time as well. Cheryl, how are you doing this evening?
Hello.
Hello, Cheryl. Welcome to KMOX.
Hi, Brad. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Good. Well, you know, I've been listening to everything tonight, and I've kind of been in listening to all of this stuff that's been going on ever since it started. I do live in the Hazelwood School District. I chose many years ago not to send my kids there because of the problems that Hazelwood had. Now, my children are all grown adults now, but with this situation that has happened, part of it goes back to the school not doing anything to start with, but it continued. Both of these girls knew there was something between them going on. It wasn't a one-way deal.
Correct. This wasn't the first time they had met.
Right. It was not a one-way deal in any way, shape, or form. I don't think the juvenile court and being released and her record being expunged when she's 18 is quite fair to a child who is brain damaged and is never going to have a normal life.
That's the question that I have, Cheryl. And if we could determine whether or not she would have to serve and be transferred to an adult prison after she turned 18, you know, I would probably be more on board with this.
But, I would too.
But
if, I would,
you know,
too.
Because then that would wouldn't that satisfy both issues? In other words, she's 15, she has no criminal record, she can go to a juvenile facility, but then when she's 18, she can serve out the rest of her sentence in an adult facility. To me, that would satisfy that problem that arises when you see the horrific nature of the crime. But simply walking out at 18 and saying, see ya, and as you leave and knowing that your record has been expunged, that's the part that I'm not on board with.
That's the point I'm not on board with either. And I'm sorry I can't help. She might not have been in any trouble previously to this, but this has happened. If she walks away from this and all she gets is a juvenile and then expunged,
that's a problem.
What's she going to do after that?
Exactly. Hey, Cheryl, we've got some other folks calling in here. And in fact, I was wanting to talk to Bill. But Cheryl, thanks so much for calling in. Great to hear from you.
Thank you so much. I love your program. I listen to you every time you're on.
Well, thank you very much.
Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too, Cheryl. Great to talk to you. And we're going to have to take a break right here. When we come back, we lost Bill earlier, and I want to go back to Bill after the break because Bill was formerly with Juvenile Services, and I want to get his perspective on what I just laid out. Brad Young, At Your Service. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to At Your Service, and I want to wrap up this topic with, we've got some two folks holding here, and I'll be wrapping up this topic with these calls, but Bill has been holding, and Bill, we lost you because of a cell signal, but I just want to ask you this question. If she, from your perspective, if this defendant is convicted of first-degree assault and she goes to a juvenile facility, would there be a possibility here, from your perspective, that Marnice DeClue could then be transferred to an adult facility to serve out the remainder of her sentence?
My understanding is it wouldn't be unless she committed another criminal act while she was in custody. And believe me, I've seen that happen.
Yes, I'm
where
sure you have.
Juveniles were being held until 18, and then they assaulted another juvenile or a staff member, and were then adjudicated as an adult. And once they turned 18, then they were turned over to the adult system.
Okay. Well, Bill, I'm sorry. I need to move on here. We got another caller, and then we're going to have to take a break. But you've been extremely helpful, and I appreciate you calling in this evening here on KMOX. Chris has been holding for an awful long time as well. Hey, Chris, how you doing this evening?
Hey, okay, Brad. I just wonder. I'm not as well versed or schooled as you are in the Hazelwood situation, but I often wonder. What if there was a white girl that beat the tar out of almost within inches of her life, beat that black girl up, just assaulted her like that? The Urban League, the NAACP, the whole civil rights circus would be working in gobs of overtime to send that girl up the river to prison. I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. Like there's a double standard out there, and I think that girl did not deserve to get brutally beaten like this. And the scum that just gathered around and just watched, I think they're just as culpable. They didn't, you know, nobody even intervened to try, you know.
Not at all.
Help that girl.
That's so sad, Chris, that you had all these bystanders, and the only thing they were interested in doing was watching and then recording it on their phones. And nobody was interested in stopping a fight that led to a horrific, life-changing injury to Kaylee Gain. And nobody was interested in stopping that fight.
Well, there's just a horrible double standard when it comes to civil rights. And there is such a thing as reverse racism.
Oh,
I don't. Nobody wants. I mean, very few people admit to it. But I just, it's sad.
It is
and
sad.
Just the last just the last thing, Brad. I hope what Maria Kina was reporting, I hope the Riverfront Times can come back in some way. I remember that paper, 30, 40 years ago when they had the personal ads in there, and I lean more conservative, but it was a free paper. It had some interesting stories in it, but I hope it can come back in some way.
I think it will, Chris. Hey, thanks so much for calling in this evening. I appreciate
it. Keep up the good work, Brad.
I will. Right. I'm here to do that, Chris. Thank you very much. I've always said that the Riverfront Times is really indispensable for this reason, that every time they come out with a voting guide, I pretty much know who to vote against. Just so you could write that one down and take it to the bank. But I want to talk about this idea of an American dream. I really wanted to get to this topic because this show is about ideas. I don't advocate in favor of any person. I'm not about a political party. I'm not about advancing one person over another person. The goal of this show, when I'm on Wednesday nights, is to discuss ideas. This is the quintessential marketplace of ideas. And there's nothing I like better. Ethan and I were talking about this during one of the breaks. There's nothing I like better when someone calls up to disagree with me, because that's how ideas are formed and opinions are shaped. And I enjoy that. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was this idea of the American dream. And we hear this. And I just read, there was a story that just literally came out a couple of days ago. I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal, talking about the idea of the American dream. What does it mean? And is it even achievable? And here's the part that I disagree with about this concept of the American dream. Think about this. Anytime you've heard that phrase mentioned, what is always shown? It's always shown as a house with a picket fence. And it says, this is the American dream. And that's the part that I disagree with. Because if you look back and read what the founding fathers were writing about and the things that prompted them to create this country, it wasn't about having a house with a picket fence. And most of them did, at least those who did until lots of homes were destroyed in the Revolutionary War. But the idea was more than just something about property. Although, again, property is part of it, but it doesn't get to it. And so if you want to get to the heart of what is the American dream, from my perspective, it can be encapsulated in one word, freedom. Freedom. So if you want to go out and buy a house with a picket fence, God bless you. You get the right to do that. If you want to rent a condo, you can do that too. It's about freedom. And freedom to choose, freedom to pursue, rather, to choose your career, your profession, how high you want to go, your educational capabilities, those ideas, to pursue your own religious convictions without interference from the government, the freedom to express your political opinions, all of that is encompassed in the idea of the American dream. And yet, any freedom has limitations. You've heard it said that, and there's a famous phrase, I don't know who coined it, but my freedom to swing my arm ends at my neighbor's nose. And that's a very good idea, because this idea of freedoms are limited by how my freedoms impact your freedoms. Now, where did we see that on display recently? On college campuses across this country. We saw that on display in living color in our living rooms every single evening. And this is what it showed. And to me, this is why I think this is a topic we need to be talking about. Because all the protesters were saying is that I have a right to speak, I have a right to camp out, I have a right to protest, and I have a right to harass Jews. Let's break that down for just a moment. If we get back to our foundational concept that my freedom ends at your nose, my freedom to swing my fist ends at your nose, what were those protesters doing? Well, first of all, they were taking over private property. They didn't own it. They were violating laws and regulations because they didn't have a right to stay there. They didn't have a right to camp out on the campus. They were destroying private property by camping out, destroying the grounds. They were bringing in plywood and fencing, and they were building little mini cities to keep out the police. How does freedom encompass the confiscation, the theft, the literal stealing of private property for your own benefit? That's not freedom. That's called theft. How about, you talk about stealing again, how about the other students who are trying to get their degrees, who are trying to go to classes, who are trying to graduate? All of them had their freedoms curtailed. They couldn't pursue their education. Many of them had their graduations canceled. And these are the same kids that had their high school graduations in many instances canceled because of COVID. And so then their college graduations were canceled. Why? Because someone was asserting their definition of freedom, even though it impinged upon the student's right to get an education, to graduate, to be able to enjoy with their families the accomplishment of graduating from college. Couldn't do that. Why? Because some guy who hasn't bathed in a week and doesn't know how to use deodorant is taking over the college campus and preventing other people from exercising their right to get an education. So, and when we talk about schools, it's interesting that when you look at the abortion issue, the left tries to say, I get the freedom to choose. Well, that freedom to choose never includes the freedom to kill another person's life. That freedom doesn't, because again, look at our definition of freedom. My right to swing my fist ends at someone else's nose. So if you look at the child in the womb, does that child have its own distinctive DNA? Absolutely. Is it just a piece of tissue within the mother's womb? No, it's not. It's a living entity comprised of its own unique DNA, separate and distinct from the mother. And so why should her right to choose result in the termination of that child's life? That's not freedom. It's murder. But yet, when you talk about freedom to choose, the left never wants us to have the right to choose school districts. They don't want you. Yeah, you have the right to choose whether you're going to kill your child or not. However, if you want the right to choose to send your kid to a better performing school, my goodness, you don't have the right to choose that. The public education, you cannot have as a choice within the school district. You must use this hegemony of the public school district unless you want to go pay tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars for an education for your children. That's not the right to choose. That's not freedom. And so when you look at whether it's social media today, many of the conservatives were talking about whether the COVID virus came out of the lab leak in Wuhan, China. They were censored from social media at the direction of the Biden administration. So free speech was curtailed. The free expression of ideas was curtailed. But then also likewise, you've got Florida and Texas saying that social media companies have to allow these kinds of speech going on, which to me is censorship from the right by saying we're going to control how you exercise your private medium. Freedom is important, folks. And as you look at the columns of history, as governments get larger and more powerful, freedoms get smaller and rarer. And to me, that's what concerns me about the growth of government in this country, is that growth means inextricably that your right to freedom gets smaller and smaller and smaller. What do you think? How would you define the American dream? How would you define it? And is it even achievable today? 314-436-7900. Call or text. Phone lines are open here for the rest of the hour on At Your Service, KMOX. Welcome back to At Your Service. You know, we're not talking about anything weighty tonight. Just what does it mean to define the American dream? You know, and people don't talk about stuff like that anymore. And that to me is frustrating because we're all caught up in what are the Kardashians doing, and I can't even list all the things. Like, is Paris Hilton having a baby? And I don't care. Let's talk about ideas that matter, not about gossip. And so that's what I like about doing this show. But I was talking about freedom and religious freedom, and it just occurred to me that even with religious freedom. Think about this. About around Thanksgiving, we study and we always celebrate the pilgrims coming to this country from England. But there was an entire wave after wave of settlers that came to the shores of what was then just the New World from England. And they were escaping religious persecution because in England, they only had one church, the Church of England. And if you didn't agree with what the Church of England did or said, too bad. So there was the lack of freedom that drove them to come to this country. There was also the lack of economic opportunity in England. And they came to the United States, and they were willing to take risks in order to better themselves, to better their lives, to better their families. And that's ultimately the goal of freedom, is that you have those opportunities. Because when that freedom is taken away, opportunities die on the altar of bureaucracies. And that, to me, is what concerns me when I look around at America today, is our disappearing freedom. Barbara, you've got some thoughts on this. Welcome to KMOX.
Yes, freedom is being responsible. It's being responsible for your actions, like you said. Don't punch anybody or hurt anyone. Being responsible as an individual, being moral, being considerate of other people and having respect for other people.
Yes.
And also having respect for the law and having dignity and believing in your country and serving your country.
Well, in what ways, Barbara? Thank you, Barbara. And I agree with everything that you just said. But from your perspective, in what ways are you seeing all of those ideals that you built into this idea of freedom? How are you seeing those ideals eroding in 21st century America?
They are eroding because people aren't, in World War II, the people, they served their government to win World War II. Some of them were my dad. He wasn't drafted. He volunteered to go to World War II. He got married. He had children. He had three children. He got married and then he had children. He didn't expect the government to pay for his children. He worked hard. He worked hard. He worked for the railroad for 55 years and raised his children and sent his children to school and paid for it. Or he had his children work hard to work and get through college and not do anything in college but try to get a degree to get a job so that they could do the American dream. They worked hard. My dad worked hard. And they had the American dream of working hard and trying to get ahead. And if you go to college, you work hard and you try to get ahead, you try to get the best grades you can, get out, get a job, and pay your taxes and do what's right by this country and serve your government. I served my government for 16 years in the Army.
Thank you,
and
Barbara.
Like I said, I didn't expect the government to pay for my college. I paid for my college. I worked for the college. I went to a community college and then to a public college. I worked hard. I worked for the college. I recruited for the Army when I was in college. Then I served in the Army for 16 years. I got an honorable discharge. And I will tell you, the thing about it is it's a work ethic. You got to work hard in this country, and then you get what you need.
You do. You're exactly right, Barbara. Hey, thanks so much for calling in this evening. It was great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening to KMOX. And following up on Barbara's idea here, we've heard a lot of Supreme Court cases talked about, and a lot of big things are going to be discussed by the Supreme Court by the end of the term in June. Things like, what does the president have immunity or not? Can the January 6th defendants be prosecuted or not? Murthy versus Missouri. Can the federal government dictate and control what social media companies say or do and the ideas that they exclude? Those are all big topics. But there's one case that's really slipped under the radar, and it fits in with this topic of freedom that I'm talking about this evening. And that case is called Moore versus the United States. It sounds really dull. All right. When I tell you about it, you're going to say, Brad, that is the dullest case. Why are you talking about it? But the Moore versus the United States deals with something very arcane that was in a bill that was passed several years ago, where people who retire overseas or who have some money overseas, can it be taxed? But at the end of the day, that's not what that case Moore versus the United States is about. That case is about something called a wealth tax. What do I mean by that? Well, both under the Constitution and in your own experience, when you pay taxes, what do you pay taxes on? You pay taxes based upon money that you earn. So if you earn $100,000, you're taxed at a 25% rate, you're paying $25,000 in taxes, or whatever your tax rate might be. But this idea that's in the statute and is being discussed in Moore versus the United States would enable the government to tax not just what you earn, but also what you own. Now, let's let that sink in for just a moment. Because if you have a house, and this only applies right now to people who have extraordinary levels of wealth, and so then it makes it okay. Well, it's okay. We're just going to be taxing the billionaires. But then to Moex. Welcome back to At Your Service. You know, we're not talking about anything weighty tonight. Just what does it mean to define the American dream? You know, and people don't talk about stuff like that anymore. And that to me is frustrating because we're all caught up in what are the Kardashians doing, and I can't even list all the things. Like, is Paris Hilton having a baby? And I don't care. Let's talk about ideas that matter, not about gossip. And so that's what I like about doing this show. But I was talking about freedom and religious freedom, and it just occurred to me that even with religious freedom, think about this. About around Thanksgiving, we study and we always celebrate the pilgrims coming to this country from England. But there was an entire wave after wave of settlers that came to the shores of what was then just the New World from England. And they were escaping religious persecution because in England, they only had one church, the Church of England. And if you didn't agree with what the Church of England did or said, too bad. So there was the lack of freedom that drove them to come to this country. There was also the lack of economic opportunity in England. And they came to the United States and they were willing to take risks in order to better themselves, to better their lives, to better their families. And that's ultimately the goal of freedom, is that you have those opportunities. Because when that freedom is taken away, opportunities die on the altar of bureaucracies. And that, to me, is what concerns me when I look around at America today, is our disappearing freedom. Barbara, you've got some thoughts on this. Welcome to KMOX.
Yes, freedom is being responsible. It's being responsible for your actions, like you said. Don't punch anybody or hurt anyone. Being responsible as an individual, being moral, being considerate of other people and having respect for other people.
Yes.
And also having respect for the law and having dignity and believing in your country and serving your country.
Well, in what ways, Barbara? Thank you, Barbara. And I agree with everything that you just said. But from your perspective, in what ways are you seeing all of those ideals that you built into this idea of freedom, how are you seeing those ideals eroding in 21st century America?
They are eroding because people aren't, in World War II, the people, they served their government to win World War II. Some of them were my dad. He wasn't drafted. He volunteered to go to World War II. He got married. He had children. He had three children. He got married and then he had children. He didn't expect the government to pay for his children. He worked hard. He worked for the railroad for 55 years and raised his children and sent his children to school and paid for it. Or he had his children work hard to work and get through college and not do anything in college, but try to get a degree to get a job so that they could do the American dream. They worked hard. My dad worked hard. And they had the American dream of working hard and trying to get ahead. And if you go to college, you work hard, and you try to get ahead. You try to get the best grades you can, get out, get a job, and pay your taxes and do what's right by this country and serve your government. I served my government for 16 years in the Army.
Thank you,
and
Barbara.
Like I said, I didn't expect the government to pay for my college. I paid for my college. I worked for the college. I went to a community college and then to a public college. I worked hard. I worked for the college. I recruited for the Army when I was in college. Then I served in the Army for 16 years, got an honorable discharge. And I will tell you, the thing about it is it's a work ethic. You've got to work hard in this country, and then you get what you need.
You do.
You're working hard.
You're exactly right, Barbara. Hey, thanks so much for calling in this evening. It was great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Camo X. And following up on Barbara's idea here, we've heard a lot of Supreme Court cases talked about, and a lot of big things are going to be discussed by the Supreme Court by the end of the term in June. Things like, what does the president have immunity or not? Can the January 6th defendants be prosecuted or not? Murthy versus Missouri. Can the federal government dictate and control what social media companies say or do and the ideas that they exclude? Those are all big topics. But there's one case that's really slipped under the radar, and it fits in with this topic of freedom that I'm talking about this evening. And that case is called Moore versus the United States. It sounds really dull. All right. When I tell you about it, you're going to say, Brad, that is the dullest case. Why are you talking about it? But the Moore versus the United States deals with something very arcane that was in a bill that was passed several years ago, where people who retire overseas or who have some money overseas, can it be taxed? But at the end of the day, that's not what that case, Moore versus the United States, is about. That case is about something called a wealth tax. What do I mean by that? Well, both under the Constitution and in your own experience, when you pay taxes, what do you pay taxes on? You pay taxes based upon money that you earn. So if you earn $100,000, you're taxed at a 25% rate, you're paying $25,000 in taxes, or whatever your tax rate might be. But this idea that's in the statute and is being discussed in Moore versus the United States would enable the government to tax not just what you earn, but also what you own. Now, let's let that sink in for just a moment. Because if you have a house, and this only applies right now to people who have extraordinary levels of wealth, and so then it makes it okay. Well, it's okay. We're just going to be taxing the billionaires. But then tomorrow, we're taxing the millionaires. And then next week, we're taxing the thousandaires. That's how government works. But let's talk about this Moore versus the United States and the wealth tax, because it is the quintessential freedom. Because if you buy that house with a picket fence, and that house, let's say, is worth $200,000, should you be taxed every year based upon the value of that wealth, the value of that house? I own that house. I bought it. But the government wants to tax you on it because you own it. And then when it goes down in value, are you going to be taxed less? Or if it goes up in value, you're not seeing any additional money. For example, if you owned a house for 10 years, you've probably seen the value of your house double over 10 or 20 years. So should you pay double in taxes because your house goes up in value? That doesn't mean you got more money in your pocket. It doesn't mean that you've got more cash in the bank. It doesn't mean that you're earning any more money. It's a fixed asset. And yet that's exactly what the extreme left, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, that's what they want to do. Their ultimate goal is to tax your wealth, not just tax your income. Because once that happens, do you really truly own anything? If our assets can be taxed to the point that we have to sell them to pay the tax, do you really own it to begin with? And isn't economic freedom one of the paramount reasons that people came to this country and continue to come to this country, is economic freedom? That's why Moore versus the United States, it's a case nobody's talking about. And yet to me, it is enormously important because it defines for our government, what level of freedom do we as citizens have? Freedom from overtaxation and freedom from the theft of property. Now, again, this is only focused at people who are billionaires. And so it's easy to sit back and say, you know what, is Jeff Bezos going to lose any sleep over being taxed on his assets? I don't think so. But it's not about who is taxed. It's about, does the government have the power to do it, regardless of whether you're a Jeff Bezos or whether you're living below the poverty line? Does the government have the power to take away what is yours in terms of wealth, even though it does nothing for the amount of money that you earn? That's why that case is so vitally important. And when we come back from this break, I'm going to talk about a crazy story that, again, falls into this theme of freedom, but it deals with this. Is a taco under the law a sandwich? Now, what does that have to do with freedom? Stick around after this break, and I will clue you in. Brad Young, at your service on Camo X. Goodness, where did the evening go? It seems like I just got started, and now 2 hours have just, whoosh, gone away. So thank you for hanging out with us here on Camo X tonight. We've had a lot of great callers, a lot of great texters, and a lot of great ideas that we've discussed. And, of course, that's always the purpose here on At Your Service. And I was talking about freedom and what that means and how, and at least from my perspective, that is the quintessential American dream. Isn't just a house and a picket fence, but it's the freedom to say, I want to get a house or live in a condo. I want to worship the way I think that God is leading me to worship. I want to go out and start a business and have the freedom to turn that little business into a multi-billion dollar international conglomerate. That's what makes America great. Isn't just that Americans are better. That's what the left doesn't understand about the term American greatness. We're not asserting that Americans are any greater than anyone else. What we're saying is that our system of freedom allows greatness to emerge in a way that doesn't exist anywhere else on the planet. Nowhere else on the planet does freedom emerge like it does right here in the United States. And yet, as I mentioned earlier, there is an inverse relationship between the growth of government and the existence of freedom. As government gets bigger, freedoms get smaller. And here's a great example of that. And this was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The story came out at the end of last week, and the media has just, there's been a firestorm of media attention over this story. And let me set it up for you. This takes place in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And there's an entity, it's a government entity, called the Fort Wayne Planning Commission. And there was this area, it was a strip mall. And the Fort Wayne Planning Commission set restrictions on what kind of businesses could go into this strip mall. And one of their restrictions was this. It said you cannot have any restaurants, including fast food style restaurants, except for the following. This is from the Fort Wayne Planning Commission. You can have, and I'm quoting from their regulation, a sandwich bar style restaurant whose primary business is to sell made to order or Subway style sandwiches. And it goes through and says you can have sandwiches, but you cannot have a restaurant in this facility. And so there was a business that wanted to start there. It was a taco place. They sell tacos. And the Fort Wayne Planning Commission said, no, we're not letting you in here. I'm sorry. Even though you want to be in this strip mall, we're going to say no to you starting this business because you don't sell sandwiches. We only allow sandwiches in here. So what did happen? The taco shop hired a lawyer, God bless lawyers, and they filed a lawsuit and they said, listen, tacos are Mexican style sandwiches. And so the entire case revolved around what is the meaning of a sandwich. And at the end of the day, the court that ruled on it basically looked at what does a sandwich mean? It means a continuous piece of bread that wraps around food. And so the court held that describes a taco, right? Tortillas are made of bread. They're made of flour. It wraps around the product that's in there. This instance is meat. and a taco is a sandwich. Now, whoever thought that a court would have to debate whether tacos amount to sandwiches? And there's also been this debate for years about whether a hot dog is a sandwich. Well, under this definition, even a hot dog is a sandwich. It's a continuous piece of bread that surrounds a meat product or a meat-like product. So, but it's easy to laugh and say, my goodness, did the lawyers really get paid to argue stuff like that? Well, by golly, I hope they did get paid. That's, you know, my wife always likes to say it's good when the lawyers get paid. But in this instance, the question is not really about the silliness of the lawsuit, but it's about the idea that the Fort Wayne Planning Commission, which is a local government agency, wanted to restrict the freedom of a business owner who wanted to start the business that they wanted to create, have the freedom to be an entrepreneur, to start a business, to grow a business, maybe franchise a business. But they were being stopped, and only because they fought it in the courts and had to argue the silly thing about whether a taco is a sandwich. That's what it took to stop the government from squelching freedom. And that is my concern, my friends, is that as we think of all the laws that are passed every year by our government, all the regulations that are passed by government agencies, all the ways that our freedoms are restricted, am I advocating for no laws or no restrictions? Of course not. In the previous segment, I talked at length about how the freedom to swing my fist ends at your nose. So there are restrictions. But the question becomes, how much is too much? And at what point do we say, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be sending politicians to Washington to create more laws and regulations. Maybe we should be sending politicians there to do away with some restrictions, to do away with some laws that hold back freedom, that restrain what has made America the center of exceptionalism on the planet, the greatest country that's ever existed. Does it have flaws? You bet. Does our country have sins that we need to confess and get past? Absolutely. But that none of that takes away from this idea that freedom has made our country the greatest country ever. And hey, I want you to stick around here on Camo X. Coming up next is the Dave Glover Show. I'll be back next week at your service, Camo X. Oh, it seems like I just got started and now 2 hours have just whoosh gone away. So thank you for hanging out with us here on Camo X tonight. We've had a lot of great callers, a lot of great texters, and a lot of great ideas that we've discussed. And of course, that's always the purpose here on At Your Service. And I was talking about freedom and what that means and how, and at least from my perspective, that is the quintessential American dream. Isn't just a house and a picket fence, but it's the freedom to say, I want to get a house or live in a condo. I want to worship the way I think that God is leading me to worship. I want to go out and start a business and have the freedom to turn that little business into a multi-billion dollar international conglomerate. That's what makes America great. It isn't just that Americans are better. That's what the left doesn't understand about the term American greatness. We're not asserting that Americans are any greater than anyone else. What we're saying is that our system of freedom allows greatness to emerge in a way that doesn't exist anywhere else on the planet. Nowhere else on the planet does freedom emerge like it does right here in the United States. And yet, as I mentioned earlier, there is an inverse relationship between the growth of government and the existence of freedom. As government gets bigger, freedoms get smaller. And here's a great example of that. And this was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The story came out at the end of last week, and the media has just, there's been a firestorm of media attention over this story. And let me set it up for you. This takes place in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and there's an entity, it's a government entity, called the Fort Wayne Planning Commission. And there was this area, it was a strip mall. And the Fort Wayne Planning Commission set restrictions on what kind of businesses could go into this strip mall. And one of their restrictions was this. It said you cannot have any restaurants, including fast food style restaurants, except for the following. This is from the Fort Wayne Planning Commission. you can have, and I'm quoting from their regulation, a sandwich bar style restaurant whose primary business is to sell made to order or Subway style sandwiches. And it goes through and says you can have sandwiches, but you cannot have a restaurant in this facility. And so there was a business that wanted to start there. It was a taco place. They sell tacos. And the Fort Wayne Planning Commission said, no, we're not letting you in here. I'm sorry. Even though you want to be in this strip mall, we're going to say no to you starting this business because you don't sell sandwiches. We only allow sandwiches in here. So what did happen? The taco shop hired a lawyer, God bless lawyers, and they filed a lawsuit and they said, listen, tacos are Mexican style sandwiches. And so the entire case revolved around what is the meaning of a sandwich. And at the end of the day, the court that ruled on it basically looked at what does a sandwich mean? It means a continuous piece of bread that wraps around food. And so the court held that that describes a taco, right? Tortillas are made of bread. They're made of flour. It wraps around the product that's in there. This instance is meat. And a taco is a sandwich. Now, whoever thought that a court would have to debate whether tacos amount to sandwiches? And there's also been this debate for years about whether a hot dog is a sandwich. Well, under this definition, even a hot dog is a sandwich. It's a continuous piece of bread that surrounds a meat product or a meat-like product. So, but it's easy to laugh and say, my goodness, did the lawyers really get paid to argue stuff like that? Well, by golly, I hope they did get paid. That's, you know, my wife always likes to say it's good when the lawyers get paid. But in this instance, the question is not really about the silliness of the lawsuit, but it's about the idea that the Fort Wayne Planning Commission, which is a local government agency, wanted to restrict the freedom of a business owner who wanted to start the business that they wanted to create, to have the freedom to be an entrepreneur, to start a business, to grow a business, maybe franchise a business. But they were being stopped, and only because they fought it in the courts and had to argue the silly thing about whether a taco is a sandwich. That's what it took to stop the government from squelching freedom. And that is my concern, my friends, is that as we think of all the laws that are passed every year by our government, all the regulations that are passed by government agencies, all the ways that our freedoms are restricted. Am I advocating for no laws or no restrictions? Of course not. In the previous segment, I talked at length about how the freedom to swing my fist ends at your nose. So there are restrictions. But the question becomes, how much is too much? And at what point do we say, you know what, maybe I shouldn't be sending politicians to Washington to create more laws and regulations. Maybe we should be sending politicians there to do away with some restrictions, to do away with some laws that hold back freedom, that restrain what has made America the center of exceptionalism on the planet. The greatest country that's ever existed. Does it have flaws? You bet. Does our country have sins that we need to confess and get past? Absolutely. But that none of that takes away from this idea that freedom has made our country the greatest country ever. And hey, I want you to stick around here on Camo X. Coming up next is the Dave Glover Show. I'll be back next week at your service, Camo X.